Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
January by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Janus am I, oldest of potentates. Forward I look, and backward, and below. I count, as god of avenues and gates, the years that through my portals come and go. I block the roads and drift the fields with snow. I chase the wild fowl from the frozen fen. My frosts congeal the rivers in their flow. My fires light up the hearths and hearts of men.
David, those were the words of the American poets from Portland, Maine, where he was born. 19th century poets. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, with his poem called January, which I thought was rather beautiful. Did you enjoy that?
I did enjoy that. Yeah. I particularly enjoyed the reading.
And the music, maybe.
The music gives it a third dimension.
Yeah, the music like that. So we'll come to the reading in a second, because that's, I think, of great significance. And that also thereby hangs a tale. There's a little story, right? The music, I think... So that music was by Sibelius, and it was his... Andante... I can't remember. Andante something. But it's one of those tracks of music where you can kind of put it under anything and it will enhance it. So... Actually, we could have prolonged it throughout the length and breadth of this entire podcast, and it would have enhanced
this podcast.
And it reminded me slightly of my father-in-law about 10 years ago, when I first introduced him to Nando's sauce, medium.
That's a good segue.
Medium peri-peri sauce, you know, just medium chili sauce. Mm. And I can't remember what the dish, macaroni cheese or something like that, or chips. He put it on when he was around at ours, and he just dribbled a bit on there. And then he put his knife and fork down and declared... And bear in mind, he was in his sort of late 60s at the time. He said, so now I've discovered this, I'm going to have Nando's sauce with everything for the rest of my life.
And ladies and gentlemen, Never Strays Far is brought to you by Nando's. No. See, that's how you do an advert. That's how, if we were sponsored, you tell a nice little anecdote.
That's so true.
You just did a Nando's advert, you did it with care and sincerity.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And also, that's a potential avenue of revenue we haven't really explored yet. Fast food restaurants, isn't it?
No.
Fast food chain. Not that they're... I wouldn't describe Nando's as a fast food chain, per se. I'd describe them as an institution which brings fine Portuguese-based Southern African grilling to the masses and does it in a sustainable and affordable way, and is a democratic joy.
They bring colour to the high street.
That's so much better than what I said. You're in charge. You're in charge of inventing the slogans. So that was the music. So the music was by Nando's, by the famous Norwegian composer Sibelius Nando, and his Peri Peri Suite.
Could have had this, Melinda. Could have had this.
Could have had all of this, and you threw it away. Like most people right now are throwing away their Melinda apples. They're just picking them up.
Disgusting.
Picking them up in the fruit bowl, giving them a little squeeze, noticing that they've gone a bit soft, and there might be one or two little black bruised spots in there, or possibly a little hole in the skin where an insect has burrowed in. and they're throwing them away right now across the world. Oh, by the way, things. By the way, David, I looked at our end of year analytics. Did you have a little look at that?
I didn't do the year, just the calendar year. Tell me.
Well, I didn't look at it in any detail whatsoever, except they popped up, a little thing popped up saying, where do most, this is really amazing actually. Where?
Oh, it's Lewisham.
It's literally half a mile from my house. It's Blackheath, Lewisham. It's half a mile up the road.
This is just that I've seen that before. I've always noticed that tracking in the analytics is that most of our listeners are in Southeast London.
That's insane. Because podcasting,
it's insane.
I don't think it's a good thing.
I don't think it's got legs.
I don't think it's something we need to tell Nando's.
Well, unless Nando's are... Look, do you have a Nando's in Lewisham?
Oh, God, yeah, we have lots. Yeah, we have a premium Nando's in Lewisham, okay. Actually, yeah. Yeah. I don't know how that fits together, but I was surprised. Yeah, Blackheath is... Blackheath... So give yourselves a pat on the back. If you're...
Because haven't we spoken about Blackheath as a park run?
No, because there isn't a park run in Blackheath. There should be, but
why not?
Blackheath is famous for, David, being the start of the London Marathon. It's where everyone assembles.
Oh, that's where I should have been a couple of years ago when I was planning to do that.
I spent New Year's Eve. I spent New Year's Eve on Blackheath at about 11 o'clock. Kath and I wandered up the hill onto Blackheath, and we met with two friends, bunch of friends actually, but from two other households, and we kind of triangulated our positions, and we sat at a cafe that was obviously closed, but it has a kind of pub table at the back that was just open on the common, and we sat there and we bought mince pies and a few drinks in a thermos, and we sat there and saw the new year in on the middle of Blackheath, and it was absolutely...
Did somebody have a guitar? Did you sing songs?
I had a bugle with me.
Of course,
a battered military bugle that I bought for one of my kids when they were very little, and actually I didn't buy it. Our neighbours bought it. But anyway, it's old knackered thing, and I can just about at half a push I can play the last post. So on the chime I played the last post on a military bugle, and all of London kind of lit up with fireworks. It was actually... I'm not a big fan of New Year's Eve, but it was a good one. Actually, it was a good one this year.
Looks good. It's a lovely ceremony. That was the biggest takeaway from analytics is that most of our listeners are in Southeast London.
Just up the road. I might as well just you know, do a recording and just drop it round.
To cassettes.
Cassettes through your, you know, here's your podcast.
On your bike.
On my bike. Yeah. Just pop it through the letterbox. Junk. Oh, Never Strays Far's just arrived. It's just literally, it's dropped.
You should get you should set up a local radio station.
Well, it's kind of what I'm doing, David, except that it's not what I intended to do. I intended to have you know, be the co-host of a podcast with global reach.
There's some work to do.
I basically, you know.
Oh, but on that, it's really hard to get global reach because it costs loads of money.
Right.
Like loads of money.
Right.
Yeah. I'm kind of finding that out. You're like talking...
What, like more than 50 quid?
Probably. No, actually, that's not... That's for each, probably within our segment, we're looking around 50 to 60 pounds per customer acquisition.
What?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And that's kind of, yeah. It's pretty nuts, isn't it? And that's... You're talking about digital... Well, actually, that's probably everything now. And you know, because obviously you know certain things... There's also Google have within this, and I think within our segments as well, because the competition you're talking in certain areas, $148 per customer acquisition. And that's not, we're not talking about podcasting, we're talking about cycling apparel.
Okay, all right. So we've drifted slightly from the podcast world to the cycling apparel world.
But it would cost us to, with our podcast, I take a wild stab in the dark in order to break free of Blackheath and Lewisham. It would cost us probably 15, 20 pounds per listener.
Wait, so we've got tens of thousands of listeners, right? I mean, I'm spinning that figure slightly, but it's definitely slightly, in that ballpark.
Yeah.
And if we'd had to pay 15 quid to get each of them.
Well, that's what our value is, because we were leveraging that off our organic growth because of the people who already follow us, who are stuck buyers, who believe in us, who are interested through thick and thin, who are curious in our adventures and our randomness and just the things we talk about. Yep. But most other people have to buy those people. Mm. And we're giving things to people. That's the kind of, it's a transactional relationship. Mm. They follow us and that helps us keep doing it, even though Nando's aren't going to sponsor us in the near future.
Well, you don't know that for sure, do you? We've only just opened the dialogue with Nando's.
But it does mean that some of the people that listen will buy the road book or buy stuff from chapter 3.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's very true. That's very true.
And it's like that's the quid pro quo.
I do feel like it's quite extraordinary how, because we're podcasting a little bit less frequently now because there's nothing going on, how we've fallen into this habit where at the beginning of every podcast we have to kind of analyze and justify why we're even doing it. It's a bit self-help, isn't it?
It's existential. It's existential.
It's a talking therapy of sorts.
It's,
yeah.
Well, I think because genuinely we don't know why we're doing it.
Yeah, that's true.
Really. That's not true. We enjoy talking
that's
to each
true.
Other.
That's true. Mustn't forget.
That's number one.
Oh, no. And, we've forgotten. So we talked about the music and the music being a bit like Nando's, yeah? David, that was 10 minutes ago. But much more important than the music was the voice, who was quoting Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. And the voice belongs to, I was going to say your friend and mine, but that might be over-egging it slightly. Although, I'm not sure it is, because I think we bonded.
I don't think it is.
Yeah, I think we're very fine.
I think it feels like one of those moments in time where time stopped, where we arrived in the Alps at this lovely hotel and we'd been a little bit mercurial and left everybody and raced out of there. And so we got to this nice little hotel.
Oh, it was a lovely hotel, wasn't it? Was this 2016 or 2017 or something like that?
2016, it feels like. Feels like ages ago.
I think we were on the prototype Chapter 3 Bromptons, weren't we, which I've still got.
Yeah, we were first year, you're right. Yeah,
yeah, I think so it's that one.
Like the pre-V1 Chapter 3 Bromptons.
So we were super stealth.
And so we got there and it was just the restaurant. It was, often we stay in quite crappy hotels, which is just the best way of describing it. Occasionally we get a nugget, like a little respite of old school, kind of local character filled. And this is one of those places we walked in and we sat down at a table, and the table, it was empty and it was closing as usual. There was a table next to us with this long haired dude and his dog sitting next to him.
Yeah.
And there was this long haired dude and he was on the table next to us and he looked very out of place. He looked like somebody from the 1970s, not 60s. Probably mid to late 70s.
I'm thinking that's about right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And he kind of, at one point we're sitting there talking and this is for anybody, we were in a little bit of our antisocial moment, just you and me talking, and he heard us speaking English. He leant across and said, Hey, where are you guys from? And he had this mid-Atlantic drawl. He wasn't American.
No.
Wasn't American, 100%. But he wasn't kind of English either.
He's a citizen of the world.
He's a citizen of the world. And so he engaged us in conversation, and, well, you can tell the rest.
Well, I like to think, in my memory, he had a kind of oil skin, like maybe with a collar folded up kind of jacket, a little bit, vibes, and a big cowboy boots. Possibly, even with some sort of like ironware hanging off the side of them, you know, like that kind of vibe. Mm-mm. And I'm pretty sure he had a dog at his side.
Dog.
Yeah, the black dog.
And, had
yeah,
a black dog.
With a little, I don't think he had a conventional dog lead. I think it may be a bit of rope. And we got talking, didn't we? And I think he recognized you certainly and me a little bit because he'd been watching the tour for years and years and years. And wanted to engage and talk about the tour. And it was great. And we found out that this chap's name was Tom Moriarty. And that he is...
Great name.
Great name. And that Tom was, and forever will be, a singer-songwriter of some note who sings a lovely kind of lyrical singer-songwritery type stuff. Got a beautiful voice, bit halfway between, I'd say, kind of Leonard Cohen and maybe a little bit, but it's a bit softer than that. It's kind of lovely lyrical stuff. But just of late, so I...
A little bit yeah. Cohen Lennon.
What, John Lennon?
Cohen Lennon. Yeah. Look, I'm a little bit Lennon.
Well, yeah, so he's, got a, he's a wordsmith for a start, bit, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. He's a bit of a wordsmith. Yeah. Yeah, and Billy Joel.
And he's
that's kind of was his combo.
A little bit Billy Joel. I'm just looking at a picture of Tom now. Mm. He's had some great reviews down the years, including
but
Guitarist magazine says, for fans of Ben Harper, Ray LaMontagne and Van Morrison, 5 stars. And Tom,
can you remember why he, because he was just on the road, wasn't he?
He was just cruising around with the dog. He did have a dog, didn't he? I haven't made that up.
No. I remember vividly the dog.
So Tom...
It was him and his dog.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah. So we spent the evening together. And I think we saw him again at breakfast and he was just going to hang out, go around, walk in, and then maybe catch a bit of the bike race. Him and his dog then, you know, and we subsequently kind of post, you know, we followed him on social media, and Tom used to post wonderful kind of wholesome messages about nature and, you know, and all this kind of thing. And then he went quiet for a few years. He got a bit angry during Brexit. I remember.
Oh, did he? Oh, yeah. You've been monitoring.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, checking his analytics out. But you know, he's a citizen. He's a citizen of the world, so you know, he's quite right to get a bit angry about Brexit, I suspect. And then he went quiet for the last couple of years, and then just recently he's resurfaced in my, you know, just sporadically, and he posts poems that he loves, and he just reads them for, why not? He posts his poems on YouTube, Tom Moriarty's poems, and he just reads them in this lovely voice. And he's got a really interesting selection of poems, and it's a pleasure to listen to him. And I may have infringed his copyright by stealing his intellectual property.
Do you think we should get Tom Moriarty on the pod? I mean,
I've always felt that.
It's the missing link.
Yeah, I've always felt that.
And to have him as a special coming in... Yeah. Kind of occasionally.
Ah, oh, Tom. That where's would be Tom? Magical. Because I reckon Tom gets around a bit, where's you know, Tom? Like, where's Tom? And Tom will just pop up.
Well, Tom, that was the thing. See, he was because he's one of those travelling Wilburys.
He's a travelling, you know? Well, he was a travelling Wilbury without actually being in the travelling Wilburys.
You know,
but I know what you mean. But, yeah. But that would be good. That'd be great.
Yeah, that's super cool.
All right,
so that's what else is going on?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's start the podcast and have the jingle. So, bike racing, David. I've billed it online already. This is your opportunity to round up all the all the close season action.
My opportunity.
Bring us up to speed with all. Yeah, your opportunity to, you know, because you'll have kept your finger on the pulse, I'm sure, with what's going on in both road and cross and track, you know, all the disciplines of cycling.
Yeah, definitely. So, okay.
What can you tell us?
I can tell you that Wout van Aert's won 9 of the 10 races he's entered in the cyclocross, concluding...
No, seriously, is that a fact?
That's a fact. Concluding in the Belgian National Championships... This was Sunday just gone, a few days ago. The only race he didn't win, he crashed, so he made a mistake. That's his fault.
Pidcock won that.
And taking nothing away from little Tom, it's, you know, you got to beat him. You don't crash, you put him under pressure. And Pidcock is doing the world's cyclocross in the States.
In the States?
Wout van Aert, I don't know where isn't. Wout van Aert isn't, because he's just been using his training to win all the classics, I think.
Yep.
He doesn't need the stripes. Matteo Vanderpool turned up for one. Pretty amazing. Yep. Just turns up for one, gets second. His knee kind of goes, or his back, and then he's out again. But that's classic. Vanderpool just turns up, gets second, not too far off first, and disappears out again. Vanderpool's thinking about something else. So that's cyclocross in a nutshell.
He's a little bit... Mathieu van der Poel is a little bit prone to injury, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a little bit? Yeah, he's a little bit. I think... yeah, he is. I think also he's a perfectionist. So he doesn't...
Ooh, that's interesting.
He doesn't go through... He's very objective driven. So he doesn't see the point, and he's very happy to take a whole two months out racing to accomplish something. So if something's slightly wrong, he's like, oh no, let's go away and fix it. He doesn't need validation. There's the thing. Mathieu van der Poel does not need validation.
Yeah.
Because he's so confident in what he's doing. So if he drops in and it's slightly not right, he'll step back out and go and get it fixed and come back to win. Yeah. So he's a very special character in that sense. Well, Van Aert is almost kind of pushing through because he's the monkey on Wout van Aert's back is Mathieu van der Poel.
It's kind of strange that he's committed so wholehearted. Well, I know he missed the beginning of the cyclocross season this year, but you know, since he's kind of joined in, he's been, like you say, 9 out of 10 victories and one mechanical or accident or whatever it was that prevented him from winning the other one. It's and then he was saying, Wout van Aert was saying, now he's off to join up with Jumbo-Visma at their altitude training camp or wherever.
Do a day job.
I presume that. Yeah, off to do the day job. And then he kind of like slightly disingenuously, you know, but very modestly said, I'll probably be the first to be dropped at the training camp, won't I? Because I've just been doing cyclocross. I don't know if he'll be the first to be dropped.
The rest of his team will be like, you won't be.
No. Yeah. Oh, by the way, talking about Jumbo-Visma, David, they've announced six of their, you know, all things being permitted, Tour de France team. It's just insane because Rowan Dennis has joined them now. So, you know, so you've got Roglic and Vingegaard, who they've announced as joint leaders. Well, not joint leaders, but they're both leaders, whatever that means. I don't know. There's a slight semantic difference, isn't there?
Yeah, that's a hedging.
Yeah, but it's interesting the difference between saying they're joint leaders and they're both leaders. I think there is a slight difference.
Let's put it this way. In Team UAE, Tadej Pogacar will not have a joint leader.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's true.
That kind of goes to show. If you've got somebody who's going to win it, you don't need a joint leader.
Yeah.
So I guess Jumbo are still... Jumbo. What are we? Jumbo? Jumbo?
Jumbo. Well, with the same thing we've been for years, David.
Jumbo.
You just can't remember, can you? Jumbo. No, Jumbo-Visma. Jumbo-Visma? Yeah.
Jumbo. With Jumbo, I think they're just still hedging bets, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but they've got so many bets to hedge, haven't they? It's brilliant. So they've got them two, plus Kruijswijk, Dennis.
Oh my God, it's a pretty amazing team.
Sepp Kuss and Wout van Aert. That's the six they've announced. So they've announced, David, I'll reiterate, Primoz Roglic, Jonas Vingegaard, Rowan Dennis, just to knit it all together, Wout van Aert, Sepp Kuss and Steven Kruijswijk. I mean, and they've got two berths empty that they haven't said. And don't forget, they don't take a sprinter to the tour next year because they got rid of old Dylan Groenewegen, didn't they?
So, were you being ironic? And I say this with total sincerity because I like Rowan. But we said Rowan to knit it all together. It's like he's like a daisy bomber. he could do either. He could go either way.
Okay, but there are two things about Rowan. I mean, there are lots of things about Rowan Dennis. In fact, the last time I saw Rowan Dennis was around in your
studio,
Chapter 3. I spent a whole afternoon with him. He was absolutely
lovely.
Brilliant. We had such good fun. It was great fun. Yeah. But he is two things. Like, he is two things. He's off the bike, insane, you know, as you say, like, what do you call it? Cluster bombs going off everywhere.
Yeah, cluster bombs. Just daisy bombing. just pushing people's buttons left, right, and centre.
But when he's riding in a stage race on a bike, not as a leader, he is the glue, isn't he? Because, you know, arguably without Rowan Dennis being the super glue that he was, Theo Gegenhardt doesn't win the Giro d'Italia in 2020.
I'm just going to totally segue again, just very briefly. So I went on social media 2 or 3 weeks ago. So I took the apps off, so I dip in on my computers for stuff that.
Yeah,
curiosity.
You've been quiet, man. You've been quiet.
I basically removed off my apps.
Good on you.
Making a deal out of it, just to avoid distraction from my
Well, you've
head.
Made a big deal out of it now, just saying it on a podcast. Yeah.
So I've made a super big deal of it, and everyone just leave me alone. But but what I did see during that was, I think it's Pro Cycling Stats or something, does a rank your your favorite pro bike riders.
Yeah, I didn't really understand what they were doing. I noticed they were doing something. I didn't really get it.
But I just want to say this. I think I was like 150. It might have been 250th or 255th.
You? Okay.
Or 100. Or I'll throw myself back, maybe 100, 155th. But you know who was placed behind me?
Rowan Dennis.
Theo Gegenhardt. Yeah. So, you know what? I've still got it.
You still got it, David. So what is that based on? Is that based on people clicking on your profile?
Popular vote. It's popular vote.
Oh, it's a vote.
It's a vote. It's the user's vote. Ah. So, you know, it's customer right. votes, client votes. It's the people. It's the people who have chosen.
People don't always get things right, David.
So I'm either 155th or 255th.
Yeah.
And Teo's 156th or 256th. So, you know, I just want to say that. Just want to put that out there.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're right to make that point, and you made it very well.
Yeah. Anyway, carry on.
And the other thing, so Rowan Dennis, glue or not glue. The other thing he said was that, and I just sort of skimmed a headline today, so I don't know any details, unsurprisingly, because I don't read that much cycling stuff, especially not off-season. But he said something about, one of my reasons why I've moved to to Jumbo-Visma is because I noticed that at Ineos, they were beginning to look at what Jumbo-Visma were doing and kind of take their lead from them and copy them.
Nice.
Which I thought was quite interesting.
That is interesting. I mean, what did Team Ineos say about his departure?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But did you see the video that Jumbo Visma launched a couple of weeks ago? Is it 10 days ago, a week or so ago, with the drone footage of their new service course in the Netherlands?
No, is it like McLaren or something?
Oh, so it's a micro drone, tiny little HD drone thing.
Going through doors.
Oh,
and
it just goes, and it goes into this big anonymous looking warehouse on the outskirts of some anonymous looking town in the Netherlands, and it skips in, you know, and you kind of follow a rider in through the roads into this approach road, then all of a sudden you're at this big warehouse, and it scoots in through the big entrance doors, and then you see this kind of huge array of trucks and vehicles and all their big things stacked up, and by God, they've got a lot of big vehicles when you see them all together like that. And then you kind of go into their, literally flew straight in without a single cut into their kitchen galley, went through the kitchen where food was being prepared at the back side of that, and then straight into where the bikes were all racked up, and then up. It's honestly, it goes on and on and on, and you're looking at that going, that place is genuinely huge. That is genuinely huge. And for the first time I think ever, I thought, that looks like a proper global sport with serious money behind it. That looks like football or Formula One or something. That looks amazing.
It's a decline and fall of a team when you start to show off behind the scenes.
That is a very interesting point. Very interesting. Cool. Philosophical point there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about the results, isn't it? That's what matters.
Yes, indeed, David. Yes, indeed. Eventually, we'll get some racing underway this season, won't we? I think the obviously the Tour Down Under was cancelled months ago and won't happen.
I know. I feel sorry for Stuart O'Grady, because Stuart O'Grady, my dear friends, and he was made the director of the race, and it was such a brilliant thing that
he hasn't directed a race yet, has he?
No, I don't think. I saw a picture of him with his head out of a car at something, but you know, it was really big last year,
and I guess this year they're having their. You know, it's just a domestic kind of race instead, isn't it, for all the domestic
teams. So it's super gutting, and I think it's really difficult for the whole Australian scene as well, because that race had become was really helping the Australian racing scene, and was starting to get some traction, you know, and now it's just been taken off the grid. So, thankfully,
it'll be back, though. That'll be back, wouldn't it? I mean, I've heard no talk about the Worlds being in Wollonga this year, though. I mean,
yeah, that's true. That was supposed to happen, wasn't it?
It's not a foregone. Well, it should still happen. I mean, it's supposed to still happen.
How do you feel about Djokovic, by the way?
Oh, I've loved that story.
I love that story so much.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant, isn't it? On so many levels. Mostly, I have to say, it's been augmented and enhanced by his bonkers family of Serb nationalists.
Yeah, what's the scoop? So that's why Farage was visiting them, because they're...
Oh, Farage, yeah. Obviously, Farage had to get involved, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then Farage gets... Farage gets fully involved in a tennis story, by going out to Belgrade and backing the I mean, they are genuinely kind of worryings. By the way, the background to all of this, to be serious for a second, is that Bosnia and Herzegovina is on the brink of another civil war.
You know, seriously?
The Serb Holocaust-denying nationalists are on the march again in Bosnia and Herzegovina and threatening the threatening the Bosniak population. So on the one hand, I can laugh about it. On the other hand, I can't laugh about it. But you know, from the Farage perspective, he's kind of like gone in there thinking this is a populist, anti-authoritarian thing that I can get behind. So I'm going to seriously meddle in tennis now and get involved in tennis. And then Andy Murray tries to put him away. Well, does put him away on Twitter, doesn't he? And saying, you know, by the way, they'll be shocked when you find out when you get there that you've campaigned your whole life to keep Eastern Europeans away from any form of gainful employment in the United Kingdom. And then he comes back saying, just stick to tennis, will you, and leave the politics to the big boys. And you're going, well, leave the tennis to the tennis players then, Farage.
Yeah, God. Andy Murray's like a fine wine, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a very dry wine.
A very dry, like fine wine.
Hard to appreciate fine wine, a salty wine. Maybe like, have you ever drunk from the Bordeaux region, a vin de Grave?
No. Oh, Grave, yeah, I have.
Grave.
Yeah,
it's a little very, bit very salty. I think very extremely dry, kind of. He's one of them. He'd be a vin de Grave, I think.
He's a hidden treasure. We gotta,
where you sometimes you drink a vin de Grave and you go, not sure about that. But if you paired it with a very kind of, you know, luscious.
I'm going to say this out loud. I think I'd like to be friends with Andy Murray.
Well, you're both Scottish sporting icons.
Yeah.
So I think by rights, you should just have his number. Have you not got his number?
No, never met him. I think maybe my doping thing kind of caused some issues with him. But, you know, we're young. There's time.
I don't know what to say about that. But you'd like it. What, you think you'd like him?
I think I might like him. I think he might like me as well. You know?
Well, that's a leap. I mean, no, I'm saying, he'd like you, David.
No, I mean, that's always like when you're punting for friends.
I'm sure he would like you. Well, I mean, we can turn this into a really like strange
Tinder.
Viral Twitter thing, I think. Get David
Tindercast.
Get Andy Murray. Yeah, a campaign. Hashtag Andy talk to David or something. So, you know, so he can reach out to you. But I mean, you know, name a bigger Scottish sporting icon than David Miller and Andy Murray. Kenny Dalglish.
Good.
There's a few.
Yeah. Alex Ferguson.
Alex Ferguson. Yeah. Gordon Strachan. Doddy Weir.
Yeah.
Quite a few rugby players. And Liz McColgan.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
Yeah, there's a few, isn't there? Chris Hoy.
Probably Andy's. Chris Hoy, he's really good. Sir Chris
Hoy.
Sir
Chris
Craig McLean.
Coach Archibald.
Steve Archibald, Barcelona football player.
Yeah.
He's much bigger than me. That's 1980s football.
There have been a few, actually.
What about golfers? There's got to be
Sandy Lyle. Sandy Lyle.
Pretty good.
Bernard Gallagher, was he Scottish?
Yeah. Willie Miller.
Yeah. Racing drivers?
Oh, David Coulthard. Damn it.
Jackie Stewart.
Dario Franchitti. Sir Jackie Stewart.
Sir Jackie Stewart, just off the top of my head. All bigger than David Miller, I think. But
so I've put about 22, 23.
So all I'm saying is that Andy Murray's kind of like list of people that he wants to be friends with who are equivalent sporting stars from Scotland might be quite congested and you might have to wait your time a little bit. But that's not to say we can't, you know, get a petition going of some description.
Just, you know, it's worth a go, isn't it? Just like a coursing pint.
What do I think of Djokovic? Do you know what I think of Djokovic? Is I think with a degree of kind of sort of introspection about this and consideration, I think he should probably just get vaccinated.
Mm.
And if he doesn't want to get vaccinated, which I think is now kind of quantifiably a stupid and selfish thing to do or to decide, if he really wants to go out on a limb fly in the face of all the evidence and all the social responsibility that goes with it, and bear in mind what some of my family members have to put up with in terms of their workplace. Mm-hmm. I would go further than that, and I would say, you know, if he really can't bring himself to put this, as he considers it, untrustworthy foreign body into his bloodstream, then he should make that decision private and stop banging on about it. And I think that if he ever tests positive for COVID, he should self-isolate like the rest of us do and not infect people. And I have every sympathy, despite the fact that his position might be being played for politics a little bit in Australia. I have every sympathy for the man on the street in Melbourne who doesn't want him anywhere near their city.
Yeah. They've had a rough time, Australia, as well.
And they've had a really rough time. You know, whether or not it's been the right policy or not, I don't know. But it's been the policy, and that's the conditions under which they've lived. And for exemptions to be made for millionaires like Djokovic, and a lot of the blame must lie with, I'm sure, with the Australian Open organisation, who've obviously sold them an absolute curveball, or just acquiesced to his kind of compromised thinking. But it's an absolute mess. Especially when you consider, David, because we started talking about Australia, and you considered, you know, you were full of sympathy for your friend Stuart O'Grady, and I am, and I'm full of sympathy for Australian cycling. Yeah. You know,
because kind of the race is there, and then dudes just flying in 2021st Grand Slam.
Because they've just looked at it and they've gone, it's unfeasible. We can't get all the riders in and out of Australia.
Yeah,
you know, it just won't happen. Whereas Australian tennis have just gone, nah, we need Djokovic, don't we? So anyway, I'm pretty cynical about that. Yeah.
What else did we have planned to talk about? Kits. Well, can we talk about kits?
Yeah, let's talk about kits, because it's what people do at this time of year in the cycling calendar. I mean, I don't know, David. I struggle to kind of have too strong an opinion. I would say that I have quite enjoyed the thing that's gone on, although I haven't followed it very closely, in the Women's World Tour, where, is it, three different teams have come up with essentially the same design.
Yeah, and then purple and blur it and some orangey, lavender and some orange.
Quite faded kind of thing. Mm. And one other non-UCI team did the same thing, and that was Andy Schleck's team, women's team, and they were the ones who got told to change, even though I think they'd registered theirs first or something. I don't know. So that's been a bit of a storm in a teacup and a bit of a silly Ferrari, but it is, I think it's really interesting. We did an infographic in this year's, or last year's, I should say, roadbook about predominant colours in the pelotons. And I think we'll probably do that every year, actually, because it does change quite markedly, quite quickly, and it is really interesting when you build it up over time. I don't know what this year's predominant color is, really, David. Have you figured that out? Having a man on apparel as you do,
dark blue seems to be in a lot of places. I tell you what I think, and I'm just looking through kind of, I think, and this is quite the women's FDJ kit.
Yep.
Is incredibly elegant.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And it's predominantly blue, isn't it, with white cuffs?
Yeah. And they win because they're the only team that the national champion, there's no sponsors on there.
So that's I'm a little bit
disappointed that they've got the clothing apparel brand on there, because you should just have, it's almost a policy that there's just no branding on there. But the women, the kit's beautiful. It's got white, the arms, and then this navy blue and red. Looks much better than the men's kit, which stays its white predominant and blue
it's
and red.
It's unchanged, isn't it? I can't see any difference. I think it's pretty much
one thing, because I'm personally invested in this, even though I'm 45 and it's been many years, is Cofidis.
They've gone. It's the biggest single change in a
ever.
Decade, isn't it, with them?
Two decades, 25 years.
Yeah.
20, the quarter star, of a century.
The old... The yellow sun has gone.
Exactly. So, I mean, I did a podcast with Bobby Julik, who was my roommate and my teammate in 1997 when I turned pro. And then I was writing something to him afterwards, and it was 25 years ago. That's a quarter of a century we were living and racing together as pros. And And that kit's essentially always been the same. So when I saw this new one come out, I was like, oh, that's actually really elegant. And they've gone for the vertical positioning of the brand. So it's kind of gone a little bit what AG2 are, who still win, in my opinion. The AG2R La Citroën Mondiale, their kit is so cool. It's so disruptive with that diagonal branding. All of a sudden,
you don't notice the brand. Isn't it?
You don't, it's really good. Astana, they suck balls. That just looks terrible. Barring Victoria's.
Well, to be fair, their country is undergoing political turmoil, and the president of Kazakhstan has ordered his armed forces to shoot on sight. So they've got bigger concerns, I think, other than you know whether or not your kit
design.
You know, like David Miller doesn't think the kit looks great.
Yeah, Barring Victoria's nice, few shapes, colours are good.
Cofidis kit. I'm just looking at that Cofidis kit again, David. It's really good, isn't it?
It's elegant. It's beautiful.
It's really good.
Bora Hansgrohe have done really well, but it's very similar to Bahrain Victorious in the sense
except it's a totally different colour.
The colour, but it's still using the kind of blocking and the same sort of design principles. I do wonder
blocking
whether because Lacole sponsored Bahrain Victorious last year. I wonder if they had an in-house designer that's transferred because it looks like the same design language. Across Bahrain Victorious and Bora Hansgrohe. Bora Hansgrohe is very nice, by the way. It's very nice. And then we're going to the women's teams. Ineos Grenadiers.
Yeah.
A little bit disappointed.
Move on. Lotto Soudal are pretty much the same. Movistar have gone all dark blue, haven't they? With a light blue M.
Yeah. They've been leading for a while and all of a sudden it's gone a bit meh. So Movistar's meh. If we had a scale, I'd say men's FDJ is meh. I'd say Ineos Grenadiers meh. Israel Startup still looks like Salvio's team in Italy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, what are they doing?
Do you know what I think is absolute? I mean, I don't, you know me, I don't really have a strong opinion. I think all cycling kits, almost by definition, are ridiculous.
Yeah.
But because people, we've often spoken about this, people don't look cool in cycling kits.
Yeah, it's very
especially
difficult.
As soon as they step off a bike, they look ridiculous. And even when they're on the bike, they look. So, but one kit I think is really poor. And I'll tell you why I think is Bike Exchange's kit, which is.
Why?
So blue. Well, so, but they've gone for this blue, light blue shorts, and then it kind of fades up to a kind of powder blue top in the men's team. And then the light blue shorts with a pink trim for the women's team fades up to sort of powdery pink.
Mm.
And I'm literally thinking, is that where we're at? Is that where we're at? So have you read the room? Is this 2022? Or is that how you think men and boys and girls should be differentiated? I think it's an absolute abomination. It's such a simple, it's such a simple thing to get right as well, David. Tell me, because you've gone through this whole kind of like, you know, evolution, revolution in Chapter 3's design, haven't you? About kind of, you know, changing the way you think about gender, changing the way you think about all sorts of things as well, sustainability. But if someone had come, you know, presented that in a focus group to you and gone, because it would be really brilliant because the boys could be powder blue and the girls could be pink, what would you have said?
I don't do focus groups, and this comes from Mikkel Rasmussen, who I work with, who... anthropologists, etc. And one of the things I also, like you, have a daughter, and women have always brought me up, and I don't have such a big deal with pink and purple. I don't think it's a talking point. I know loads of the girls. I know Maxine, my daughter, loves pink and lavender, loves different colors to boys. Now, we then position this as men as because men don't like those colours, so women shouldn't wear them. So I'm going to be a little bit of an agent provocateur on that one. I'm going to say I love the Bike Exchange women's kit much more than I like the men's. And I think those purple and pinky colours make it better. And if I was a man, I'd be jealous of that kit. It's got nothing to do with femininity. I think that's creating stereotypes.
No, it's not creating stereotypes. It's just drawing down on stereotypes.
Well, I will say, Ned, that the women's kit for Bike Exchange is much better than the men's kit. The men's kit is terrible.
Two things. that I would completely agree with you on that on that point. And if I were to want to wear one or other of those kits, I'd definitely choose the pink kit.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? And the blue kit is crap. But the differentiation is the point I'm trying to make. You know, it's like what do you call them? What do they call them in America, where they gender reveal parties or whatever? You know,
yeah.
It's kind of crazy old fashioned thinking, and which isn't to say that the pink and purple isn't nice. The blue's terrible. But anyway, I think it's a disappointing concept.
I think it's obviously the teams are now. It's great that these teams are, to a certain degree, being forced, but buying into creating their subsidiary women's teams.
Yeah.
Because they're subsidiary projects that are, they're loss leaders for the teams.
Scrolling down this article, David, Trek Segafredo have got a men's and women's team and they've announced their kits in parallel. You know, Trek's is the same as it was last year. It's got a kind of predominantly red stripe. And the women's team is the same blue as Bike Exchange's blue, which is clearly supposed to, you know, so
yeah,
that's a more inventive way of using color to my mind. And by the way, the Trek kit looks great. The women's.
So I guess this is always, and this is what we've done with chapter three is it's not your decision that you're a man.
Yep.
So, cause all our stuff for women is designed by women and we have a 300 test pilot group.
Yep.
And who define what we do. And you'd be surprised how the colours are often very feminine.
Okay. All right. And well, if that's the case, that's fair enough. And like I say to
you're taking your position on it. And I think
the issue comes with the differentiation, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It's, I'm looking at a picture of them, the two of them, a male rider and a female rider side by side.
Yeah.
He's in the blue and she's in the pink. And it seems like something from the 1970s to me.
Oh, God, no. I think the woman's got the better kit.
Well, I agree. No, I agree.
Better design. So you asked me my opinion as a kind of as a designer and kind of as a kind of thinking I think.
I don't want to fall out with you.
I don't put politics onto colours. Okay. Like I'm a very much aesthetic kind of. And I think that the...
I know you are.
Yeah.
Last time? It was the Hermes
crocodile skin handbag. The Birkin bag. Yeah.
Yeah, the Birkin
bag. I just think everyone overthinks these things. It just overthinks. It's not politics. It's bike racing. It's what looks good. And the women's kits look better than the men's kits. And because the designers can do it because they're allowed to do more cool stuff with the women's kit than they can with the men's. Put those colours on the men's kit because that would be bad.
Trying to move the debate on a bit, have you heard of, we've spoken about her in the past, I'm sure, the dart player Fallon Sherrick?
No,
the princess of the palace. So she, over the last couple of years, has been regularly beating the very best men's dart players in the world.
We spoke about her briefly before.
So Fallon didn't have a great world championship this year, it's just come to an end. But Fallon's darts shirt, because all the darts players have this big identity thing going on. They have their look. Mm-hmm. They're a bit like superheroes, you know. Yeah. They have their identifiable. Fallon's darts shirt is very pink. Like, it's super pink. And she's got long blonde hair that she kind of stacks up tall and everything. She's an amazing woman, Fallon. And it's a cool shirt, actually. I like it. But for me, the litmus test of how far we've come is whether or not we'll ever see the darts crowds and the hordes of people who buy the replica shirts and everything, the blokes buying into that and actually dressing themselves in Fallon Sherrick pink replica shirts. And if that happens, then brilliant. And if you're right, which I suspect you might be, about the Bike Exchange kit and that the cool one is the pink one, then they need to start making it in men's sizes so that men can buy it.
Yeah.
And then actually, do you know what? The men's team need to race in the same colours because it's the better design. So we are kind of agreeing that we like the pink, because the pink is better than the light blue. The pink should just be the colour for the team.
I guess.
So we've kind of bashed it around and in our little two-man focus group.
We should just have a one
focus group.
Nailed it. So we got this kit launching for Chapter 3 in March, which is the most beautiful and feminine kit. No one's done it before. And it was kind of led, it was a whole women design team that had to do it and did it. And I said, I don't want to have anything to do with it. You guys do it. And it's over the top feminine. It's crazy.
How do you mean?
It's Chanel inspired. It's incredibly flattering. It accentuates the figure of the female. It's harks to fashion and style and nothing to do with it. And we've not tested it, asked a few people, women to wear it, or they've done, this is the whole team that do it. And when women put it on, it's so feminine. They say, I feel empowered because I feel like a woman. I feel like a woman when I wear this. I don't feel like a man. And I was like, well, there you go. We are asking men to wear men's stuff. Women do actually like to wear stuff that is designed for them. And the color can be different and the shape can be different. It's not to say we're belittling them. It's to say they do have a totally different aesthetic to us. And it's wonderful. And it's a much better aesthetic than ours.
Well, certainly the mine. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
So I'm a huge fan for femininity and the colors and the shapes. Yeah. And so I don't think we should say it's bad that women have to wear pink or we're putting that on, because it's not at all like that.
No, but again, well, listen, I won't rake over old coals, but I think you might have missed my point about the need to have a, anyway, whatever. We've gone over that. So that's about that.
Yeah, what else did we have?
Pretty much. Well, I think, I'm not sure we had much else, did we? We spoke. No. Oh, I was just going to, we had a little bit of listener interaction.
Oh, yeah. We had some predictions.
To be honest, it was mildly disappointing and a little bit sad.
They're the best ones.
There's this clamour from all our many, many listeners to sort of get involved and all that sort of thing. And another one's just landed on email, actually. So can't tell you
fresh.
What that is yet. So, well, I'm just going to play it in at the end and we'll see what it is in the end. So, but we had two. One came from Gavin Brown, and this is rather gloomy. Gavin Brown, this was his random and hopeless prediction for 2022.
Ned locked away, isolating commentary. COVID at the tour.
So, Gavin, frankly, has predicted that I'll just be commentating from COVID isolation in 2022.
No, that's not going to happen to you twice, Ned. You did it. You've had the most brutal isolation I know, I think, in Flanders.
My Flandrian isolation.
In a loft. Yeah, a Flanders loft.
Like I said, I've kind of scrubbed that out of my memory banks. Mm. And Ellen Webster made this hopeless and random prediction for 2022 as well.
Hi, Ned and David. Ellen here. Happy New Year to you both. My prediction is that you won't play this prediction.
So, Ellen, we've totally proved that wrong. Smashed that out of the park. Mm. You have been played out to an audience of many on Never Strays Far. And this is the random thing here, because I've got no means of live playing this in. So just on trust, this is Andy Graves' forecast for 2022. We'll listen to this, and then David and I at the end of this are going to react to it as if we've just heard it, even though we haven't actually heard it. So they could have just, Andy Graves could have just slagged us off massively and said something entirely inappropriate.
There is a cycling podcast that requested a random forecast, but my fortune telling is not that compelling, and to be honest, I couldn't be asked.
Well, that was Andy Graves' contribution. Thanks, Andy. And David,
I think he's got a point. I think he's got a wonderful point.
Yeah.
I mean, I can hear where he's coming from.
So can I.
And at the same time, you know, you got to walk in a man's or a woman's shoes to really get
there's a lot of assumptions being made there by Andy, I think, and
but he's bang on. You know, it's beautiful what he said.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Beautiful
accent as well.
Yeah, lovely accent.
Lovely accent. Very nice voice. Just the tones of it. Not quite Tom Moriarty.
No.
But no one's...
Not quite Tom Morris. No. Oh, do you want to talk about voice? So when I picked up Harvey from mountain biking today, I was listening to Christian van der Velde on a podcast.
I love Christian van der Velde.
I love Christian van der Velde. So
fourth on the Tour. He finished fourth on the Tour de France.
Fourth on the Tour de France. I was with him. I still remember that. It was just magical. And Harvey jumped in the car and the podcast was still playing and I was putting Harvey's bike on the back and I got back in and Harvey said, "Daddy, who's that?" And I was like, "It's Christian van der Velde." He's like, I love his voice. And he's 8 years old, little Harvey. And I was like, "Oh, that's Daddy's friend. I'll introduce you to him one day." But it was, you could hear it, and it's just got that really deep sort of, American. He's got a lovely voice, Christian.
Oh, American.
He's the most American voice in the world.
Also, don't you think Americans just sound like they know what they're talking about? Even when they don't know what they're talking about.
Because he does. And he's got great hair.
Good hair, but they also just, I don't know, they're made for broadcast, aren't they? They're fit for broadcast at birth. You know,
should we get Christian on? We can get Christian on there. We'll just get on our next pod. Let's get Christian on.
Get Christian on, then get Tyler Farrar for Never Strays Farrar, because I'm never gonna relent on that one.
Well, let's get Christian on, because that will be the kind of the domino
the hook,
because then we can get Ryder Heschedal, we'll get Zabriskie, Zabriskie can do a show tune.
Zabriskie would be amazing, actually.
Zabriskie would be amazing.
He could do a poem.
May as well go for Floyd. Yeah. If we get Zabriskie, we've got Floyd.
And then you know Floyd where we're ending up.
Lance.
Eventually, all roads lead to Lance. All right, I better get this edited, don't I?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, should we play out with Tom's poem again?
Yeah, we should. Conclude it. Wrap it up.
All right, Tom, do your thing.
Good luck, Nando's.
January by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Janus am I, oldest of potentates. Forward I look, and backward, and below. I count, as God of avenues and gates, the years that through my portals come and go. I block the roads and drift the fields with snow. I chase the wild fowl from the frozen fen. My frosts congeal the rivers in their flow. My fires light up the hearths and hearts of men.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.